So Sinusutta, this discourse appear in connected discourses of the Buddha, Sanyutta Nikaya, Nidana Sanyutta. Thus have I heard, on one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Rajagaha in the bamboo grove, the squirrel sanctuary. Now on that occasion, the Blessed One was honored, respected, esteemed, venerated and revered, and he obtained robes, alms food, lodging, medicinal requisites. The Bhikkhu Sangha too was honored, respected, esteemed, venerated, revered, and the Bhikkhus too obtained robes, alms food, lodging and medicinal requisites. But the wanderers of the other sects were not honored, respected, esteemed, venerated and revered, and they did not obtain robes, alms food, lodging and medicinal requisites. Now on that occasion, the wanderer Susima was residing in Rajagaha along with a large company of wanderers. Then his company said to the wanderer Susima, "Come friend Susima, lead the holy life under the ascetic Gautama. Master his Dhamma and teach it to us. We will master his Dhamma and preach it to the lay people. Thus we too will be honored, respected, esteemed, venerated and revered. And we too will obtain robes, alms food, lodgings and medicinal requisites." So they just want to have food and all those things, because the Buddha was respected. So on. "All right, friends," the wanderer Susima replied. He then approached the Venerable Ananda and exchanged greetings with him. When they had concluded their greetings and cordial talk, he sat down to one side and said to him, "Friend Ananda, I wish to lead the holy life in this Dhamma and discipline." Then the Venerable Ananda took the wanderer Susima and approached the Blessed One. He paid homage to the Blessed One, and then he sat down to one side and said to him, "Venerable Sir, this wanderer Susima says that he wishes to lead the holy life in this Dhamma and discipline." "Well then, Ananda, give him the going forth." The wanderer Susima then received the going forth and the higher ordination under the Blessed One. Now on that occasion, a number of bhikkhus had declared final knowledge in the presence of the Blessed One, saying, "We understand destroyed is birth. The holy life has been lived. What had to be done has been done. There is no more for this state of being." This is the normal statement when someone become an arahant, they go to the Buddha and then say this one, "Kinan jati nirsitam brahmacharya." So there is that this custom. It's the same statement. And so this Venerable Susima heard about this. So he approached those bhikkhus, exchanged greetings with them, and then sat down to one side and said to them, "Is it true that your reverend venerable ones have declared final knowledge in the presence of the Blessed One, saying, 'We understand, destroyed is birth. The holy life has been lived. What had to be done has been done. There is no more for this state of being, for there is no future existence for them.'" "Yes, friend. Then knowing and seeing thus, do you, venerable one, wield the various kind of spiritual power, such that having been one, you become many. Having been many, you become one." So this is one of the psychic powers that one can, one who has made their mind concentrated to a very high level, and then they can actually make many bodies, 1,000 bodies and so on, out of their body. And then having made 1,000 bodies, they become again one, sort of a skill. Having been many, you become one. You appear and vanish. So that means invisibility is there. You go through, unhindered through a wall. That is that those who have developed these spaces in finite consciousness, having developed that, they reach sort of a wall and they say that let there be space. So then there is space, and then they go through that. And through wall, through a rampart, through a mountain, as though through space. You dive and in out of the earth as though it were water. You walk on water without sinking, as though it were earth. Seated cross-legged, you travel in space like a bird. With your hand, you touch and stroke the moon and sun, so powerful and mighty. So this is that mind-made body. You see, the mind-made body does not get burned from the anything. You exercise mastery with the body as far as the Brahma world. That mastery with the body, that Buddha can do this, that Buddha sort of make the mind, that the body will be imbued in the mind imbued in the body, so he can do that, and so then the body become light, and Buddha can travel to Brahma world from this physical body, not only the mind body. No, friend. Then knowing and seeing thus, do you, venerable ones, with the divine ear element, which is purified and surpasses the human, hear both kinds of sounds, the divine and human, those that are far as well as near. So that if you have Dibba Sota, that the faculties develop so that he can hear the sounds from the other worlds. Hmm? No, friend.
What do you mean develop? What do you do to develop it?
Well, the it's divine eye, for example, is by developing the light, the perception of the light. If you perceive light, then you can see faraway objects, and so with the light you can see those objects, and it lead to the we have this mind's chakku, this is the normal eye. And then the dibba chakku is that the divine eye. And then this paknya chakku, that's the wisdom, eye of wisdom. Mm-hmm. That is how Buddha got this chutupa pachanama. That is going back there. This person having done this karma, he become going to this birth and so on. So, I do not know what you have to do to get the divine ear, but I have experience with the divine eye element, you actually hear as well. So I do not know how it is, maybe it is linked to the divine eye element, that that you can hear, even I could hear the divine beings. Even there is a gatha in Tamu Timsa, I could hear those
things. Maybe is it because of the faith? Because if you have the faith on what Lord Buddha has said, so...
No, not the faith. It is, there is this development of the mind, the consciousness. It can perceive things. It can even see the things that are going to happen in the future and as well as the past. So, what's the criteria? I know about the divine eye element because I'm developing it. I don't know the divine ear, but it looks like it's coming as a part and parcel of the same thing. So, no, friend. Then knowing and seeing thus, do you, venerable ones, understand the mind of other beings and persons having encompassed then with your mind, with your own mind, do you understand mind with the lust as a mind with lust? A mind without lust as mind without lust. Mind with hatred as a mind with hatred. A mind without hatred as mind without hatred. Mind with delusion as mind with delusion. A mind without delusion as a mind without delusion. A contracted mind as a contracted mind. So this contracted mind is that when we have sloth and torpor, that mind become contracted. Hmm? And distracted mind as distracted mind. That if you have the restlessness and worry, then the mind become distracted. So that is this distracted mind. The exalted mind as exalted mind, unexalted mind as exalted. So that means you make mind vast. If you don't have these five hindrances, you can make a mind vast. Surpassable mind as surpassable, unsurpassable mind as unsurpassable mind. This is this, if you have the wisdom, anuttara is the, if you, the mind, if there is wisdom in the mind, so this mind is so pure in that level. And a concentrated mind as concentrated mind, so if there are no hindrances, five hindrances, then mind become concentrated. unconcentrated mind as unconcentrated, a liberated mind as liberated. So this liberation is that there are three kind of liberations. That the liberation by voidness, and there is this liberation by there is this impermanent nature. If you develop, then normally it's going to the seventh jhana concentration, and over there, if you contemplate the impermanent nature, there is this animitta cheto vimukti. That is, there is no permanent, any sign of permanency. And if you contemplate about the suffering nature, then there is this appanhita cheto vimukti. And if you contemplate about the not self nature, then there is this shunyata cheto vimukti. And even those loving kindness meditation developed to a higher level, metta cheto vimukti is there, the compassion, illimitable wells. So this part, what we just read, is actually part of the Satipatthana meditation, and this is the Chittanupassana, is this part. And in that meditation, we also aware of these states, this my mind is such and such a state. So this is actually first looking at somebody else's mind and say that your mind is that, this mind is deluded and so on. So because that people can, those who have developed meditation, then they can actually see how other people think and so on. But these monks are saying, no friend. Then knowing and seeing thus, do you, venerable ones, recollect your manifold past abodes? That is, one birth, two birth, three births, four births, five births, 10 births, 20, 30, 40, 50, 100, 1000, 100,000, many years of world contraction, many years of world expansion. So if someone is recollecting their past births, that they actually, normally they go by first one, you know, the last birth, the next one and so on, maybe you go for about 30, 40 or something like that. And then you normally jump that after few births, then you go for sort of significant ones. Because if you see your birth that as a human being for many births, for example, then you wouldn't want to see those births again and again. And then you would just try to contemplate, was I be born in hell? And was I born as an animal, something like that. So going by that one. So what would normally a person should contemplate about this birth is this, whatever the birth is, that's the aging, sickness, death. That's what the thing. And that's the picture you see. Otherwise you can actually see what I was doing. You know, that birth and so on. It's when I was actually contemplating and looking at my past birth, I was looking at what I was doing. And, you know, I saw that I was working as a carpenter in the past birth. And so it's just at the beginning, I didn't know what to see over there, but then I got some instructions that one should be actually looking at birth, aging, sickness and death from every birth. So that's how you, by doing that one, you would, your mind become concentrated very heavily after those things. Because what you see is every birth, what is there is this birth, aging, sickness, death. So what's the value of these things? So this they go for these 1000 births, 100 births, and many years of world expansion. I mean, Venerable Sariputta can go for one Mahakapa, a great eon, and the Buddha has no limit. He can go back any year. Many years of world contraction and expansion. Thus, I was so named of such a clan with such appearance. Such was my food, such my experience of pleasure and pain, such my lifespan. Passing away from there, I was reborn elsewhere, and there too I was so named of such a clan with such an appearance. Such was my food. Such my experience of pleasure and pain. Such my lifespan. Passing away from there, I was reborn here. Do you thus recollect your manifold past abodes with their modes and details? No, friend. Then knowing and seeing thus, do you venerable ones with the divine eye, which is purified and surpasses the human, see being passing away and being reborn, inferior and superior, beautiful and ugly, fortunate and unfortunate, understand how beings fare on in accordance with their karma thus. These beings who engage in misconduct of body, speech and mind, who revile the noble ones, held wrong view and undertook actions based on wrong view, with the breakup of the body after death, have been reborn in state of misery, in a bad destination, in the netherworld, in hell. But these beings who engage in good conduct of body, speech and mind, who did not revile the noble ones, who held right view and undertook action based on right view, with the breaks up of the body, after death have been reborn in a good destination, in a heavenly world. Thus with the divine eye, which is purified and surpasses the human, do you see beings passing away and being reborn, inferior and superior, beautiful and ugly, fortunate and unfortunate, and understand how beings fare on in accordance with their karma. So this light meditation, that perception of light, not only take out your the sloth and torpor. If you have the thinamiddha, sloth and torpor, the perceiving light is a way to get out of that one. That will help to get out that sloth and torpor. It also leads to a really good awareness. Awareness about your actions. You see, our mind sort of work with some sort of associative memory, associative way, right? So, when someone sings a part of a song, that you can sing the rest, right? So you get it to mind. So that's the associative memory. Like that, with the light, we see things. We remember things, and when there is light, all the actions we do that one with the light. So light can be used as this to see things as well as the association. So there is this sort of relationship, but it's not this relationship that the Buddha was asking us to sort of examine. Buddha asked us to perceive light. When you perceive light, if you do it for a long time, then the perception about the light arises. So when you close your eyes, you see light.
So is it like concentrating at first with like a candle or something? Sort of light or
No. Don't look at the you are not looking at the flame or the light over there.
Yeah.
You are not looking at the object either.
Yeah.
If you look at the object, then you are actually looking at a form.
Yeah.
If you look at the candle, then you are actually looking at an object.
Yeah.
So if you perceive the light, you know there is light here.
Oh, okay.
So that light, the sunlight, for example.
Yeah.
You are perceiving the light.
It's something like dispersed light, isn't it? It dispersed.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's not an object.
Yeah.
So if you perceive that one, then it's sort of registered. Right? And if you do for a long time, then there are about 18 things you have to do with the light. It's not that easy.
Oh.
So you need to do first someone who is developing this sort of thing. They even perceive this body with the 32 parts of the body, and that is called above and below. So the light remains the same. Light does not disappear while you are doing this one as well, right? And you do day by night, night by day, like that. And these illimitables, the apramana, metta, loving kindness, all those things should be there as well. So when you perceive it that, like that, the wisdom arises. It leads to wisdom as well. And the other thing is that since there is light, you develop this light. I'm not going to go much detail on it. You can see faraway objects. When you see faraway objects, you're in the Brahma world and all those things, you can see divine realms, even the hell. So, when you see, then there is this ability for you to go. You see, we normally travel somewhere when we see. If you don't see, we like a blind man, so we don't do that. When we see, we can go. Like that with the development of the light, and you see, and then when you see, you go. And it's even you don't have to think that I want to go. It's just there's mind-made body going with it.
So are we masters of light then? We have mastered the art of using light to create our image.
Yes, we were not the image. I'm talking about over here the ability, what light going to do to you when if you perceive for a long time. That the how does the technique works, I do not know. The Buddha has explained this one in Anguttara Nikaya, Chapalavagga, that discourse, where Buddha says that he was, as a bodhisattva, he was perceiving this light, and then he did not see, he did see objects. No, he see light, but not the objects. And then he refined it a little further, and then so he can actually perceive light as well as he see these objects.
So is it through concentration that he can do it?
Yes.
So in other words, we are at the moment concentrating on being here, using light, using our mind. Is that?
It's not not like that. It's the technique I cannot explain. I can explain how one can arrive at it. But what is actually happening when we are doing it, probably that there is some sort of association with the consciousness, association with that state. Therefore, one can, reach certain thing, distance and so on.
And again, I think at the beginning you should be able to maintain that light for a long time, isn't
of
it?
Of course, yes. Yeah.
Like the breathing meditation, we should be able to maintain that to do the other things, like that.
Yeah, what happened to me was that when I was meditating all the time, light was coming up. I kept on ignoring it until the divine being actually told me to develop it. Because that I have been developing this one for about 2 million years, so therefore the light arises. So, some of you might have done it as well, although you may not know that you have done it. If the meditation time, when you close your eyes and doing the meditation, if the light appears.
Don't you get that light when you do the breathing meditation also? When you get
it doesn't matter what the meditation is. Does not matter. When the concentration
is there, so
yes, there is light. So you get the ability to develop this light if you have done it before and so on. Otherwise, I was not focusing on the light at all. I was after the wisdom. That was my main goal. So by developing that one has got immense benefits. So this bhikkhu answered that, no friend, then knowing and seeing thus do you venerable ones dwell in those peaceful deliverances that transcend forms and formless attainment, having touched them with the body. That is that one would go into this fourth jhana concentration. Having reached the fourth jhana concentration, then he having understood that this is this equanimity regarding these forms and then the sounds and so on, and he would prefer an equanimity, that this equanimity is diverse, this, you know, the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. The other one is this space. If you take space is infinite, then there is this one perception, no other perception. So their space is infinite, no form. So he will attain that formless attainment. So having touched them with the body, that is that, there's the body witness to this thing. No friend, here now, Venerable One, this answer and the non-attainment of those states, how could this be, friend? So he was actually thinking, everybody declaring this, this arahantship, they all got the psychic powers. Even nowadays people, even Buddhists think like that, that the people have got these psychic powers going to this one. We are liberated by wisdom, friend. Panya Vimutti, that is what it is. I do not understand in detail, friends, the meaning of what has been stated by brief by the Venerable One. It would be good if the Venerable One would explain to me in such a way that I could understand in detail what has been stated in brief. Whether or not you understand, friend Susima, we are liberated by wisdom. Then the Venerable Susima rose from his seat and approached the Blessed One. Having approached, he paid homage to the Blessed One, sat down to one side and reported to the Blessed One the entire conversation he had had with those bhikkhus. The Blessed One said, "First, Susima, comes the knowledge of stability of the Dhamma. Afterward, knowledge of Nibbana. The stability of Dhamma is Dhamma Titi Jnana. And first one gets the stability of Dhamma and then afterward this knowledge of Nibbana. So this the stability of Dhamma Titi Jnana or the stability of Dhamma is explained in Patisambhida Amagga. Basically this ignorance has a causal relationship to nine terms. It is the relationship is to arising, occurrence, sign, accumulation, bondage, impeding, origin, causality and conditionality. Those are the six, nine terms. So, if we look at a little bit about it, there is this ignorance has causal relationship, is present to formations, arising a causal relationship is present to their occurrence. A causal relationship is present to their sign. A causal relationship is present to their accumulation. A causal relationship is present to their bondage. A causal relationship is present to their impeding. Causal relationship is present to their origin. Causal relationship is present to their causality, that is hetu in Sinhala. Causal relationship is present to their conditionality, pache. Understanding of embracing conditions, thus ignorance is a condition, formations are the conditionality, conditionally arising, and both these ideas are conditionally arising in these nine aspects, is knowledge of the causal relationship of ideas. It's very deep, that normally we say this avidya paccaya sankhara, you know, the volitional formation comes from the ignorance. So over here, it one would understand in nine terms, not only that conditionality, condition, and the origin, and the as a bondage, sanyoja, accumulation, and all those things. I will take a small part of it. Let's say that we pass away. When we pass away, then we are going to be born, right? Unless you have destroyed all the clinging. So, a person who is going to be born, there is delusion in this birth. You know, while we are living, we accumulate so much karma, and we do not understanding for noble truth. We do certain things, many things. We do meritorious deeds. We do demeritorious deeds. We go into higher concentrations, good ones, and we go into sensual desire and bad ones as well. So those are formations. So because of those formations that we have done, because of the wrong will, there is this delusion, moha. Pali term is moha. That moha in this life becomes the ignorance for the next birth. So you can say avijja paccaya sankhara, because of the ignorance there is volitional formations. Because of the delusion that we have, that becomes the ignorance at that time. That's one condition. And there is accumulation, which is formations. So that this is the second term. How this is how the Dhamma works. How the doctrine works. This is a very deep thing.
is the delusion here that that I-making type thing?
I-making contributed to it. You see, you get avidya or the ignorance because of the 12, those wrong perversions. The regarding of these things, that the foul things as fair, there is a perception, and there is this thought, and there is a view. And regarding something you perceive, from the eye, there is contact, depending on the contact, that this feeling arises. We perceive that feeling as pleasure, while it is suffering. What actually getting contacted is the pain, but we perceive it as pleasure, because we make it ourselves. So there is this feeling, that is this the pleasure in the, while it is displeasure, that there is this perversion, that perceiving in that way, and there is this perception, and also the view. So there are three things over there. And similarly, that when you have the feeling, we perceive the feeling from our perception. So we perceive it as pleasure. And there is this volition because of that. From the perception, there is volition. Volition is something that what I am going to do with it, or something like that. When I am clinging to it, holding it, and I am connected with it. Like a food, if you see food, then you are connected means that you are going to eat, you are going to have to consume it, right? And you are attached to it as well. So, then because of this volition, there are three perversions. We wrongly grasp these things, that we think that this is mine, okay? So that is, if you have sensual desire for the internal, that would lead to something called ahankara in Pali, that is this I-making. And if you apply sensual desire to the external, there is this mind-making. This is mine, the objects. So it's split into two over there. Actually, it is not two. There will be 61 views according to the Petagopadesa. There's internal one, so the regarding this body, so that's why the identity view comes as well. So there are three things over here as well, wrongly grasping these things. And then as the consciousness, as the nutriment, there are another three. That is, one would perceive that this is permanent. There is this perception, and then there is this thought that it is permanent, and then there is this view that it is permanent. So these 12 will create the what is called avijja, or the ignorance. That is the condition for the ignorance. When we have this ignorance, we go through very lengthy process where we accumulate those things. We grasp this, you know, the attavada upadana, for example, occur because of that one. That having perceived a self, you would cling to it. Because the having perceived a self means that in the nutriment as the volition, you went through that path. Therefore, you constructed some sort of a person here in your mind, as constructed. Having constructed that one, you would cling to that. So, then it goes a little bit further. And whatever thing led to this construction, what was they? What were they? They were craving is one, my view is another. So the craving and view, I cling to those things. And that leads to what is called papancha in Pali. That you have this mental ramblings about these things. And then you think they are actually true. So that leads to this something called idam sacchabhi nivesa kaya kanta. That means I am thinking that this is the truth, all else is false. What is this truth? That those perceptions that I had, that foul things, if you look at this body, it's a disgusting thing, because these 32 parts, you can see that one, right? So I had this wrong perception, but I now actually see, no, it is good, it's fair. Whatever thing I felt, I think that this is pressure. It is because it's constructed. Constructed by my own way, so I see that one as pleasurable. And then I see that it is me, mine, and so on. And it's permanent. And so it goes a little bit further, and then that leads to delusion. So the avidya created the delusion in the first place. And avidya, the ignorance, was created because of those perversions. So it's a bit deep. And so then you can see that there is this accumulation. The accumulation is occurring from this chetana or the volition. That there's feeling, you perceive the feeling as pleasurable. Because of the perception, there is volition, chetana. And the volition, you let it accumulate. Ah, okay, this is mine, that is mine, this is mine. I'm eating hoppers, that is pleasurable. And all those things comes and accumulate. So that is one law over here. So we discuss only two laws. There is attachment, which is craving. What do we get attached to? We are attaching to feelings. The feeling that constructed by ourselves, I perceive from there is this I, there is this form, and depending on the two, I consciousness arises. Meeting of the three is called contact. I consciousness, and the form.
But always one would think it is for the form you attach to, isn't it? The rupa. Well, that's what you think, but actually it is not the form, that's the feeling.
If you are getting attached to the form actually, then probably you won't be able to get out of it, right? But this is something you constructed, that's how you can get out of it. It is this, there's this form, I mean the same form you can see, one time it is pleasurable, another time painful. A person, maybe your friend, who was so good before coming in your direction, yeah, it's really good, my friend, pleasurable. Then another time he has done something and it's bad. So you can see, we are not attached to the form. If you are attached to the form, whether it is subject to aging or anything, we don't give it up. Fortunately, it's just feeling that we, you know, we, because the form led to the feeling, so we cling to that form in that way as well. So there is this craving, that's the third law. There is adoption, which is clinging, what we adopt. We are adopting something all the time. We are adopting those 12 views I was talking about, this the three perceptions, four perceptions. It is, while it is foul, we say it fair, one perception, right? While it is suffering, we say it is pleasurable. Right, so another perception. So like that you can see four perceptions, four thoughts, and four views, right? We adopt them. And there is adoption, which is clinging. There is volition, which is being. So there is this volition that we accumulate in this way, you know, we construct, and that becomes the bhava. And thus these five ideas in being as action before this life are conditions for rebirth linking here in the present life. So this is one, that of, this is the jnana, dhamma sthiti jnana, that how this dhamma works, teaching works. And I'm not going to go through detail, it's lengthy. So Buddha said, you get this one first, dhamma sthiti jnana comes first, and then there is this, afterward the knowledge of nibbana.
Is jnana and wisdom?
Yes, yes, yeah. Knowledge of nibbana. And I do not understand in detail, Venerable Sir, the meaning of what was stated in brief by the Blessed One. It would be good if the Blessed One would explain to me in such a way that I could understand in details what has been stated in brief. Whether or not you understand, Susima, first comes knowledge of the stability of the Dhamma. Afterward, knowledge of Nibbana. What do you think, Susima? Is form permanent or impermanent? Impermanent, Venerable Sir. Is what is impermanent suffering or happiness? Suffering, Venerable Sir. Is what is impermanent, suffering and subject to change, fit to be regarded thus? This is mine, this I am, this is myself. No, Venerable Sir. So, we can see this form is made of four great elements. What are those elements? In Pali we say Patavi, Apu, Tejo, Vayu, and in we can say the Patavi is the element of extension. So this book extends from here to here, you can see that is the element of extension. So whatever the hardness, the softness leads to that. And there is this element of cohesion, the liquid nature. And the cohesion is that the intermolecular attraction force. And then there is this element of motion. You can see this air, for example, move, right? There is this motion. And there is this element of heat. So form is made of those four great elements. And then Buddha is asking, is form permanent or impermanent? So impermanent nature in Buddhism is not just something, you know, like a flower get withered in the afternoon, that sort of thing. It is a bit detailed. So Buddha was asking us to see this one by contemplating. That's the only way one can actually see this impermanent nature. This impermanent nature is this long term, how it is, how we get our body, for example. This birth, this form, whatever the form you talk about. So Buddha said that, how do we get this body? It is that one seek delight in form, welcomes it and remain whole into it. We seek delight in form. You know, this body, we seek delight. You can see it is now, you hold into this body, you don't allow anybody to damage, right? While living, you feed it, wash it, treat it, put it to sleep, all those things.
Do you construct it in your mind?
The body?
Yes.
No, it's not the constructed of the mind, no. This is constructed originally. There is something what you are talking about. That is that when you are sort of in a mind-made body, and then you want to be born, then you hold into this mother and father is there, and then, you know, you are holding to that thing over there. So, at that time, this consciousness is with those sperms, for example. It's maintaining those things. And if the consciousness lives, then there's no baby, right? So the importance of the consciousness you can see. So with the consciousness, this name and form, and it is shaping the little thing inside. So the body is not apart from the consciousness in that sense. So we let it grow, all those things. But here you can see, we seek delight in that particular form, in bravo or whatever thing it is. You can see that we hold of it for some purpose. We want to be born to do something. It's a big thing one has to think. If you take a simple example, while living also, you can see we seek delight in form. The food that you want to eat, you would... I'm happy with this food that I ate today, and I want to have it tomorrow, next week, and so on. So I keep on buying it, keep on cooking it, keep on eating it. So I seek delight in form and I welcome it, remain whole into it. By doing that one, delight in form arises, isn't it? One has to sort of know from on his own mind by contemplating own wisdom. Is it so? Is it true? Is that how I actually get the delight?
So does it mean that everything arises in the mind?
Everything arises in the mind by your own application of the mind. That is this initial application, sustained application. When you keep on applying it, it's sustained over there. So don't misunderstand that the mind as a sort of a permanent thing and you plug into something and so on. Here it is that cause and conditions are there, depending on the, it's like that we always think that there are two wood pieces. If you rub it, then the heat comes in. And if you take it out, there won't be heat. So the fire comes in, and if you ask someone where is the fire comes from, well, the conditions are right, therefore the fire. And the wood pieces burnt, fire is gone. If someone asks where the fire gone, well, the condition is not there, therefore it is not there. So it's not a permanent thing. It is constructed each time by volitional formations.
So it's minute by minute you are constructing.
Not minute second, by minute, seconds second by minute. Second or whatever it is. Yes. It is being constructed all the time.
And so, now you remove it as well. You make it and you remove it.
You are not sort of... you're clinging is the one actually. Okay. You know, you are letting it go. So... One seek delight in form, welcomes it, remain whole into it. By doing that one, the delight in form arises. And the delight in form as a condition, there is existence. There is delight in form as a condition, there is this clinging, and clinging as a condition, there is existence. So we cling, we hold it, and we keep it in. It's like
going back to that question, and because that we always construct certain things in our vijnana mind, and at one stage it comes, and in the minute or second something else comes and overwrite that one, but still that phenomena is rambling around my mind. When it times come when my mind is working with that one, and that is the vijnana, the establishment, and it is the way we go.
Yes, except that the word overwrite is not overwriting. It is all the time constructed. If you say that overwrite, that means there is something there, and I am actually doing that one. These things are all the time constructed. There is this I, there is this form. I and the form meeting, there is this I consciousness. And next time I am hearing some sort of a sound, ear, and the sound, ear consciousness. They come to arise.
That's what the Lord Buddha once had said, that it's like a monkey, thing that you...
That is, you hold into.
And then,
yes.
You hold something else, and then if you see something, if you want to hear something that's not happening at the same time, but you see, and then you grab the thing that you can hear next.
Yes,
time.
Yeah. The monkey is a good example, because monkey is holding to something. It doesn't let it go until it gets something else. So if you get the other hand and let this one go, like that, we are moving from one to another each time. So this volitional formation is the one that is making it, you know, the mental factors determining where I would do. So because of that one, there is this construction. So because of the clinging, there is existence, that is the existence of the craving. Because of the existence of the craving, then that is this bhava. So there is this birth. Birth because that we accumulated things before and we want to do something about it. So the same mind is present where when the father, mother at that particular time as well.
So we are fulfilling our wishes.
Because of those accumulations, that one would go in this thing. So,
what do you mean the same mind is...
The things that we accumulated before, the volitional formations, construct the consciousness, right? Having constructed the consciousness, then let's say you are in mind-made body or whatever thing it is, Gandhabha, and at that time, so those qualities are there, so that's why you are going to be born.
So can we wish that we are born in the same family?
Well, there are conditions that you have to meet to that to happen. Buddha said that you got to be have the same virtue. The level of virtue should be the same. Understanding this wisdom should be the same. So if they have those two, one can be born in this thing.
So in other words, you can be born as your grandson or your great-grandson or daughter.
Well, if the conditions are right, it could be.
Or you go to the hell if it doesn't happen.
So there is this existence of this thing, and therefore this birth. So you can see that the form come to arise because of these things. And then Buddha explained the passing away phenomena. That is, one does not seek delight in form, does not welcome it, does not remain holding to it. So therefore, the delight in form does not arise. So there is no pressure. So therefore, there is no clinging. There is no existence of the craving, and there is no birth. So if someone understands this one, then he would see that because of the form, there is this contact. Because I got I and the form contact, and there is this feeling, and then the perception, and there is this volition. And then I get these views regarding these things. So views leads to the volitional formations. That Buddha said that one would regard this form as self. Disregarding is a formation. That is how we get the formations. There must be a view. So when we get the formations, you can see there is this consciousness. And because of the consciousness, when it is repeating, regarding the same object, you can see it's sort of, I feel it's permanent. I see a certain person, I keep on seeing that person in my mind. I mean, I don't have to see that person, There's a mental thing in my mind about that one. So then it repeats. So it's very quickly happening. So I would see that it is permanent because of this repetition. And because of the consecutive nature, one would not see that these things are subject to aging, sickness and sort of thing. But it is actually you can't repeat your consciousness going back to this one and reconstructing the consciousness again and again because of the various reasons that you need to breathe in, breathe out, the temperature, all those things are there as well. You can see the baby is so fine at the beginning, isn't it? The color and everything, because the consciousness is available to the baby just to maintain that one. When you grow up, then you need to look after the other babies, the children, your work, and so many things, right? So you can see, basically, this your mind is, what you want is the birth, or holding to this form. But there are 11 terms that not letting you that one. Aging, sickness, death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, despair, all those things are making it going the other way around. So you can see, always you want only one thing. That is this birth or the body, you know, the holding to it. So if someone understands these things, then he would see that these things are impermanent. And if something is impermanent, it is subject to suffering. And Buddha was asking, is suffering or happiness? Is suffering, Venerable Sir? Is what is impermanent suffering and subject to change? Is it fit to be regarded thus? This is mine. It is a very good word over there. If something is suffering, is it fit to be regarded as mine? That's what one should question. And if this form is subject to aging, sickness and all those things, should I take this one as mine and hold it as mine, you know, and do it for birth to birth?
And again, there is no guarantee that you get the same thing.
No, you don't. You don't get it. But still, because of the wrong perceptions, one would think that I would go in this one. And then Buddha said that, then Buddha asked about the feeling, perception, volitional formation and consciousness. Again, whether it's impermanent or not. And so Susima answered that they are impermanent and suffering, subject to change. And so therefore, Buddha said, therefore Susima, any kind of form whatsoever, whether past, future or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, all form should be seen as it really is with correct wisdom. Thus, this is not mine. This I am not. This is not myself. So there are 11 terms over here. So, any kind of feeling whatsoever, perception, volitional formations, and the consciousness, whether past, future, present, internal, external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, all consciousness should be seen as it really is with correct wisdom. Thus, this is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. The same thing that you did for the form has to be applied to the other things. Feelings. It's important to meditate on feelings as well. Seeing thus, Susima, the instructed noble disciple experiences revulsion towards form, revulsion towards feeling, revulsion towards perception, revulsion towards volitional formations, revulsion towards consciousness. So, what is this revulsion? Revulsion is not just that someone lost girlfriend or something like that. This revulsion is that you see the whole thing is this birth, aging, sickness, suffering. The body is of this nature. My feelings are of this nature. Other means that it's the understanding, the first noble truth, that this is suffering. It is a bit deep that since this people do not see that it is suffering. So here there's revulsion towards the formations, consciousness and all those five. Experiencing revulsion, he becomes dispassionate. Through dispassion, his mind becomes liberated. When it is liberated, there comes the knowledge, it is liberated. He understands, destroyed his birth, the holy life has been lived, what had to be done has been done, there is no more for the state of being. Do you see, Susima, with birth as condition, aging and death come to be? Yes, Venerable Sir. Do you cease to see with the existence as condition? The birth. So you can see that the previously Dhamma Sthiti Jnana that we discussed, that there is volition which is existence. Chetana Bhav. Because of these four accumulations. With existence as condition, birth. With clinging as condition, existence. With craving as condition, clinging. With feeling as condition, craving. With contact as condition, feeling. With the six sense basis as condition, contact. With name and form as condition, the six sense basis. With consciousness as condition, name and form. With volitional formation as condition, consciousness. With ignorance as condition, volitional formations come to be. Yes, Venerable Sir. Do you see Susima with the cessation of birth comes to cessation of aging and death? If there is no birth, would there be any aging? Would there be any sickness? Yes, Venerable Sir. Do you see Susima with the cessation of existence comes cessation of birth? So if you are not accumulating anything, any craving whatsoever, then we won't be born. With the cessation of clinging comes the cessation of existence. If I am not clinging to anything, then I am not accumulating it either. With the cessation of ignorance comes cessation of volitional formations. If there is no ignorance, I wouldn't do meritorious deeds or the demeritorious deeds. None of them will be done. Yes, Venerable Sir. Knowing and seeing thus, Susima, do you wield the various kind of spiritual powers, such that having been one, you become many, and exercise bodily mastery as far as the Brahma world? No, Venerable Sir. Then knowing and seeing thus, Susima, do you, with the divine ear element, which is purified and surpasses the human, hear both kind of sounds, divine and human, those that are far as well as near? No, Venerable Sir. Then knowing and seeing thus, Susima, do you understand the mind of others, being and persons, having encompassed them with your mind? No, Venerable Sir. Then knowing and seeing thus, Susima, do you recollect your manifold past abodes with their modes and details? No, Venerable Sir. The knowing and seeing thus, Susima, do you, with the divine eye, which is purified and surpasses the human, see beings passing away and being reborn, and understand how beings fare on in accordance with their karma? No, Venerable Sir. Then knowing and seeing thus, Susima, do you dwell in those peaceful deliverances that transcend forms and formless attainment, having touched them with the body? No, Venerable Sir. Hear now, Susima, this answer. And then, non-attainment of those states, how could this be, Susima? Because they were liberated by wisdom, by contemplating about the dependent origination, the arising phenomena and passing away phenomena. So, understanding the five aggregate subject of living. Then the Venerable Susima bowed himself with his head at the Blessed One's feet and said, Venerable Sir, I have committed a transgression in that I was so foolish, so confused, so inappropriate that I went forth as a thief of Dhamma in such a well-expounded Dhamma and discipline as this. Venerable Sir, may the Blessed One pardon me for my transgression seen as a transgression for the sake of future restraint. So, this is a good word as well. For the future restraint, let me, please pardon me, not to continue with it. Surely, Susima, you have committed a transgression in that you were so foolish, so confused, so inept, that you went forth as a thief of the Dhamma in such a well-expounded Dhamma and discipline as this. Suppose, Susima, they were to arrest a bandit, a criminal, and bring him before the king, saying, Sire, this man is a bandit, criminal. Impose on him whatever punishment you wish. The king would say to him, then, come in, bind this man's arms tightly behind his back with a strong rope, shave his head, and lead him around from street to street and from square to square, beating a drum. Then take him out through the southern gate and to the south of the city, cut off his head. What do you think, Susima? Would that man experience pain and displeasure on that account? Yes, Venerable Sir. Although that man would experience pain and displeasure on that account, going forth as a thief of the Dhamma in such a well-expounded Dhamma and discipline as this has results that are far more painful, far more bitter, and further it leads to the netherworld. But since you see your transgression as a transgression and make amends for it in accordance with the Dhamma, we pardon for you. For it is growth in the noble one's disciple when one sees one's transgression as transgression. If someone sees the transgression as transgression, that is the growth. Makes amends for its accordance with the Dhamma and undertakes future restraint. You see that if you try to steal the Dhamma, then the hell can be expected. That's what it is. So,
what is meant by stealing Dhamma?
Well, I mean, he went to steal Dhamma to make a living, so that he can go and teach his, you know, other people, and then the lay persons will learn it, and then they give alms food, robes, and all those things. So, yeah, it's stated in short. It's a very lengthy discourse in the Paticchasamuppada, the dependent origination. We have studied it before, discussed it before, so I didn't go through in great detail.
If one can understand, one try to understand Dhamma properly, that person cannot steal Dhamma at all.
No.
Because...
No, if he understand it, then he wouldn't. He has the immense gratitude towards the Buddha.
That is what exactly happened to him, Susiva.
Yes, yes.
He knew what it is.
He understood, yes. I mean, these discourses are written in short. Buddha must have stated this one in greater detail to this person. You see that as soon as Buddha says that, he said, yes, Venerable Sir. So, just to say that one, it is that explained in greater details. But when it go from, you know, generations to generation, it's the details are gone, and what is left is the one that we actually read. Okay, we will stop for today then.